Thanks, Ryan. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. If you're talking about great American success stories, the name Hugh Hefner is absolutely going to be mentioned. There's no way around that. Hugh Hefner's son, Cooper, who is the chief creative officer of Playboy Enterprises, is in studio with us, as is Stephen David, the executive producer for a great docuseries called American Playboy, which you can see tonight, 8 p.m. at the AMC River East. We'll give you all the information on how you can get tickets to see this. But everyone's going to be able to see this very, very soon in the next few weeks. Correct, guys?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be on Amazon, and it begins April 7th, Amazon Video, which I subscribe to. I'm looking very forward to seeing this. I see Playboy in a different light than you do, Bill.
I would imagine. The light I see it in is a dim light with the door locked, but Wendy, right, is a little different.
But, you know, this is something that, you know, what? How many years? 1953 was it was first published?
63 yeah. years.
Okay. I waited a few years. I'm not that old. But, you know, girls would look at a Playboy magazine and say, wow, I'm going to look like that someday. You know, so we looked at it in a different way. Girls looked at it as well. And it was done very tastefully. And I like the cartoons, to be honest with you.
I'll let my dad know.
I do have to say, since Wendy and I do this for a living, one of my first forays into the interview was the Playboy interview. At the time, when I was growing up, I don't think anyone did a better, more in-depth interview than those Playboy interviews.
Yeah. I mean, we continue to publish incredibly insightful and thoughtful interviews, but it's something that, as I've stepped into the chief creative officer role, I've made an effort to continue.
Yeah. Don't you think that the interview with Jimmy Carter was instrumental in him becoming the president? Because I do.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
It opened him up. It made a guy that we kind of knew, all of a sudden reading about him and him being so honest in that interview, I think made America aware of what a good guy he is.
I think that's possibly true, but I would also say that, as people do when it comes to Playboy, there was subtext in the interview,
sure,
that, you know, people really focused on the sex.
Lust
in my heart.
Yeah.
Which stuck with him for his entire career. So.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking about the decision a little over a year ago to not having women without their clothes on in Playboy, and you were not a fan of that, were you?
Yes, that's correct. I was not.
Yeah. But it's been reinstated. It's been fixed.
Yes. So the last issue that we published brought back nudity, and I actually stepped into the role of chief creative officer 6 months ago, and that was something that was important to me.
Yeah.
When we did it, there was press that came out, and I think a ton of people made the joke that, well, it seems like a lot of people didn't actually read Playboy for the articles. It was all about the images.
Yeah.
But the reality is when one takes a step back and thinks about it, it was a silly move to remove nudity from the magazine, because at the end of the day, the company and my father were responsible, part of the kickoff of the sexual revolution. So the idea to remove it was, I'm trying to be PC here,
right,
without being too critical, but was silly.
Yeah. But what prompted that?
It was, I think, a lack of understanding who we are. And when I say we, I mean the brand. While simultaneously believing that there was a business strategy that could be implemented that would actually drive a lot of revenue. So the idea was that a Safe for Work magazine and a Safe for Work site would ultimately lead to a whole bunch of advertising revenue that we were missing out on.
Right.
And what we found, which was what I was saying before nudity was taken out of the magazine, was ultimately advertisers are paying for Playboy's point of view.
Sure.
That really, although we have product in the U.S. and in different countries, and we have different channels with content, the brand really sells a philosophy. And if that's not being promoted and displayed in a way that makes sense, then we really don't have anything at all.
Yeah. So true. Stephen David is here. Stephen is the executive producer of the show we're talking about, American Playboy, which is the life of Hugh Hefner. I don't think there was anyone that preceded Hugh Hefner. I don't think there will be anyone that comes after Hugh Hefner that's been more important in terms of the sexual mores of this, not just the country, but the world. Has there been?
No, and I think what's really interesting is if you go back to the context of that time and you realize, you know, pretty soon after World War II, how repressive society was, you really can take the entire sexual revolution and pinpoint it to one person.
Yeah.
So I don't see how that is ever going to happen again. He's got to be one of the most iconic people
sure.
in the history of the world.
Sex was always discussed in hushed tones. You didn't want people to hear what you were talking about. But your dad, Hugh Hefner, made it something that could be talked about openly, freely.
Yeah, and we go into the fact that when he was in college, the Kinsey study came out, which yeah. was the first study that basically told you that men and women like sex.
Yeah.
And everyone was sort of blown away by that. And before that, it was just thought, women didn't like sex, men did.
We just put up with it. That's what it was said to believe. So American Playboy, this chronicles all of your father's life. Is there some little spinoff? Is there something that's focused on more than others?
Well, the show really takes place in the early stages, for the most part, of the company, I think, for obvious reasons, which is that seems to be the most intriguing at this point in time, in the mm-hmm. sense of culturally and socially, people are fascinated with the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And I think, you know, for obvious reasons, we draw a lot of parallels to what's happening now
yeah.
to then. And I think what the first 7 or 8 episodes take place from 53 to...
Yeah, the majority of it, the show really takes place up until, I would say, the late 80s. And that's you know, the origin story of it. And,
yeah.
you know, it hits the heyday years.
We were talking about the first playmate, although not referred to as a playmate, was Marilyn Monroe. How did they swing that?
So I would say you should watch the show.
I'm going to watch. I'll watch the show.
My dad actually went on this epic hunt for the image, which was published in a calendar, but no one had actually seen.
Yeah.
And he ends up negotiating and purchasing the rights to publish. And
he found that picture in Chicago.
Yeah.
About, I don't know, 15 minutes away from where he lived.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
And bought it from the guy. So the guy had it, and he bought it from the guy for like $600. And at that time, Marilyn Monroe was the most famous star in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think in a lot of ways, I would say, you know, back to the point of we can look back at history and draw the sexual revolution to one individual, Marilyn Monroe in a lot of ways was actually pushing boundaries at that point in time for sex.
Yeah.
So I think in my dad's mind, it made a lot of sense to have her be the first. Mm-hmm. It was called Sweetheart of the Month then, but eventually the first playmate.
What a good score for the first issue. Yeah. I mean, really.
Yeah.
The philosophy in the early days of Playboy was they wanted the centerfold and most of the women in the magazine to convey that girl next door feeling. But at some point, that kind of went away, didn't it?
Yeah. I always make the joke that the show The Girls Next Door actually didn't have anyone on it that looked like a girl next door.
Right.
But yes, at some point that changed because I think, you know, beauty takes on a different look depending on the generation
mm-hmm.
And the decade. And obviously Playboy told that story and communicated that for 63 years. So,
yeah.
Of course, there was an evolution there.
Stephen, Mr. Hefner rubbed elbows with some of the biggest stars, musically, comedically, movie stars, you name it. They were hanging out at the mansion. How do you stay normal? Could he stay normal with that sort of a lifestyle?
I think you know what's really interesting is we see all this because we were allowed to go through all this archive that no one had ever seen. So when you see all this video, we would see all these stars, and they wanted to hang out with Hef.
Yeah.
Not the other way around. Yeah. They wanted to be around him. So I think
he had 5 pinball machines.
Oh, yeah. That's why they went there.
No, that is, yeah, exactly. There. That's why all my friends wanted to come to the house, too.
All right. American Playboy. You can see this in its entirety as it premieres on Amazon Video on April 7th. But tonight, world premiere as part of the Chicago International Television Festival, 8 p.m. at the AMC River East, 322 East Illinois. We go to ChicagoFilmFestival.com. Is that where we're sending people? It seems to be sold out, but there will be some cancellations. Perhaps people can't make it. We'll take a quick break. We'll continue talking with Hugh Hefner's son, Cooper, and also Stephen David, executive producer of the docuseries American Playboy. It's 720 WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy. Hugh Hefner's son, Cooper Hefner, the chief creative officer of Playboy Enterprises, is here in studio with us, as is Stephen David, the executive producer of a new docuseries called American Playboy. The world premiere takes place tonight at the Chicago International Television Festival. Go to chicagofilmfestival.com. All the information is there. What's the biggest misconception about your dad?
Ooh, biggest misconception about my dad. God, what a tough question. I think it depends on who you're talking to. When you talk to people who are my age, probably that he's just an old guy running around the house.
Does he wear clothes or just in a robe all the time?
He's in his PJs all the time. I used to be so embarrassed when I'd bring friends over and he was walking around in his purple and red and green silk shiny PJs. And then as I got older, I grew into this appreciation of looking at him and saying, wow, if you can create a gig and wake up every single day in your PJs and go to work, you've done something right with your life.
That is perfect.
Yeah. I think that's probably the biggest misconception, though.
When they were casting this, was your name ever brought up as potentially playing your dad? Because you look and sound almost exactly like him.
Yeah.
Did that come up at any point?
Yes. It was a brief conversation, but we didn't get into the room where we were actually having a serious combo about it. But yes, I will tell you that the actor that was cast, though, looks eerily similar to my dad.
Oh, good. Very, very good.
And you had mentioned this footage you were going through to find out some stuff. Will we get to see the footage in this docuseries?
Yeah, the docuseries is really mostly the footage with some, you know, recrease. So it's a mix of the two. So you get the feeling of what it was like to have lived that life mixed in with the real footage as it was happening. And we do have this amazing access to this footage that people haven't seen before that is part of Hefner's essentially presidential library. That he has it's all in the top of the mansion. The top floor of the mansion is basically a presidential library with thousands of hours of footage, photographs, archive. And so we had access to all of it to make this.
Wow.
How cool is that?
He has led certainly an extremely public life, sometimes for the better, sometimes not. But what did you each learn about him that you didn't know going into the project?
I learned a lot. I mean, I probably, like everyone else, I seen the magazine many times.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that much about Hefner. And there are so many things. He was involved with a lot of social issues, which was surprising. I got to sit with him about a year ago for like an hour and a half, and I kept asking, why? Why did you do it? Because you see the lifestyle, but you also see that his whole thing was really about freedom. He kept trying to... He grew up in a very repressed household.
Yeah.
And so, and he talks about it in this documentary, how there was no love, no hugging. And so, in a way, you see him trying to get over this by what he does with his own life and trying to help others. And so, that was a surprising thing to me of how much he was involved in all these civil rights and rights for anything.
Sure. Yeah, Cooper, how about you?
I actually, there was nothing that I'm very familiar with my dad's story, so there was nothing that surprised me. I would say that the process of actually putting the show together was surprising because I thought that my dad would relax a little bit and allow Stephen and the team to sort of do their thing. And the reality was he could not be more meticulous when it came to the details of, no, that's not what happened in 1963. Or, you know, he's a major movie buff and a major fan of television and storytelling. And the reality is telling his story his way or participating in that was very important. So I think that's what was the biggest surprise to me was that he was he didn't want to – there was no negotiating of having him be hands-off.
But that makes sense because he's being represented. He wants to make sure it's accurate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But also, yeah, it just, you know, sometimes it's nice to get a little bit fantastical with a story.
Oh, and, sure.
He wasn't
buying that.
No.
There was one time we got a note after we had filmed that somebody was actually wearing a cast in 1967 while she was in that car.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like, oh.
Yeah.
He wanted it to be real.
Yeah.
That's admirable.
It's very admirable. He spawned a lot of imitators. Bob Guccione, Larry Flint, Al Goldstein. But he's different from those guys in a lot of ways. And that's a conscious effort, right? He didn't want to be like the other guys doing that.
No. I think that, again, when one thinks about the Playboy philosophy as well as what his legacy is, it was really to say sex doesn't have to be something that's dirty. It doesn't have to be removed from a sophisticated lifestyle.
Yeah.
And the combination of the two at the end of the day is sort of really the DNA of Playboy. And I will say, although one can argue what dirty is when it comes to sex, I think the other individuals who you mentioned probably are not operating with that in mind.
Right. Was there a friendship at all with any of those other guys, or was it a bitter rivalry? How would you classify it?
I think my dad would say that it was a bitter rivalry.
Yeah.
In the sense of, you know, my dad had a very clear vision and belief of how sex should be interpreted in society, and that was communicated constantly through the brand.
Yeah.
And those guys obviously communicated that in their own way through their publications, and that was that.
Yeah.
Was he the guy who gave you the talk about the birds and the bees, and how was that?
My parents obviously, as you could imagine, have a pretty liberal attitude about sex. I would say it's more European than it is American.
Yeah.
But my parents, I remember being 14 years old, and before we even had a conversation about sex, I walked into my bathroom, and beneath the sink there was a box of condoms, and I was mortified.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they said, well, we're not going to ask, but the reality is we know what you're going to be thinking about over the next couple of years, and be safe. So
that's solid parenting.
Yeah. That is.
Yeah.
Parenting has changed since we grew up.
Dramatically. Yes. And I mentioned the Playboy interview earlier, and yeah, the magazine will always be known for the beautiful women that it featured, but you guys also had an incredible knack with the Music Hall of Fame. Every year you'd pick somebody in the Music Hall of Fame. Every year you guys would do previews of college basketball and college football that were dead on accurate. The cartoons were always funny. The first time I ever saw Dennis Miller, he had won some comedy contest in Playboy magazine when he was still in college. I'd never even heard of him. So you guys were at the forefront of so many different things early on. And I think that needs to be part of the legacy that's Playboy, don't you?
Absolutely. I will tell you that it is. I mean, again, I'm in my mid-20s, so my focus is primarily continuing to introduce the brand from a content point of view online for a new audience. But I consistently take a step back and say, how can we make sure that we hold on to our editorial credibility? How can we make sure that we're getting the right people involved in the brand so that 63 years of history and publishing respect stays, whether that's online or in the magazine.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll renew your subscription.
Thank you, Wendy.
You.
That's the reason we had you guys on. I just wanted to convince Wendy.
We'll give you a free subscription.
Oh,
my husband just texted me.
Oh, hold on. This just
what about me? Good luck with all this.
Yeah, great
to
meet both of
it.
You. The show, again, is called American Playboy. The world premiere is tonight at the Chicago International Television Festival. Go to chicagofilmfestival.com/television-festival. It's all right there. And continued success to both of you. Thanks for being
here. Hey, thank you for having us.
Thank
Absolutely.
You,
we'll take a quick break and find out what's next on the Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.